Now, when you think about the concept of church, like when you wake up on a Sunday morning or perhaps during the week, you might think of the church at 5C, say. What do you normally think about? Do you think about a place where God is to be worshipped? Or do you think about other things? Perhaps when you think about church, you think more about seeing your friends or perhaps your cousins, rather than seeing God. Maybe you think, oh, I've got to go to church today because my parents, they won't be happy if I don't. Or perhaps you think, that place is just so boring. It's a waste of time. And you spend all of your time here just wanting to escape, to get outside. You just can't wait until the benediction at the end, so you can go out there, play basketball, or touch footy, or the latest computer game. In fact, some of you probably can't wait such that you're tempted to leave your device turned on during the service so that you can play with it when you get bored. Or perhaps when you think about church, you think about money. Now, for some of us, it might be because we're unwilling to part with some of our money when it comes time for the offering. But for others, church and Christian ministry has sometimes been viewed as a way of making money rather than losing money. Being the pastor of a mega church, for example, can be a lucrative career. Now, Brian Houston, some of you have probably heard of him, senior pastor of Hillsong. He personally reported in 2010 that he was on a package of $150,000 from his church, plus another $150,000 from his ministry activities outside of Hillsong. All right, that's a pretty good salary. But this pales into insignificance in comparison with some Christian preachers in America. For example, Franklin Graham. Now, Franklin Graham's the son of Billy Graham. He's currently the president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. And he was reported in 2008 to have received an income of... anyone want to guess? What do you reckon would be? It has 1.2 million just in 2008. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that this applies to Brian Houston or Franklin Graham, but it is true that some people have been attracted to the church as a means of making money, whether through getting a good job or as a means of building their own business empire. But all of this is far away from Jesus' idea of the church. As far as Jesus was concerned, Christianity is not primarily about us. It's not about us having a better life or being healthier or more prosperous. Christianity is primarily about God and how God is to be worshipped. The focus should be on God rather than ourselves. And this is something that emerges clearly from the incident when Jesus cleared the temple. Now, this episode begins with Jesus travelling from the region of Galilee up to Jerusalem. Now, in John's Gospel, whenever Jesus is shown travelling down south to Judea, which is the heartland of Jewish territory, in particular when he goes up to Jerusalem, which was the capital city of the region of Judea, Jesus always experiences some kind of opposition. But Jesus, he had a reason to go. We're told that he was going up to Jerusalem to attend the Jewish religious festival called the Passover. Now, you've probably heard about the Passover before. It was the major religious feast in the Jewish calendar. Now, the Passover, what does it celebrate? Anyone remember? The angel of death, the angel of destruction passing over God's people. This was back when God saved Israel out of Egypt. Okay, so when the Jews held the Passover, they thought about the Exodus salvation. when God had saved them from Egypt. In particular, they remembered how the angel of destruction had passed over the people of Israel to concentrate his destructive energy on the firstborn of Egypt. Okay, this was the tenth plague, the plague against the firstborn, if you remember that. Now, all Jews who were physically able to do so, they would endeavour to travel to Jerusalem each year to attend the Passover. And it was common for Galilean Jews to travel to Jerusalem for this purpose, and here we see Jesus doing exactly the same thing. But when he arrived in Jerusalem, he found that things weren't as they should be. He found in the temple those who were selling cattle and sheep and doves, and the money changers were sitting down there doing their business. Now, Jerusalem, and especially the temple area, it was a hive of activity during the Passover. It would be full of people and full of activity. Now, the cattle, the sheep and the doves that were in and around the temple there on that occasion, they were actually required for the people's sacrifices in the temple. And the job of the money changers was to change any unclean foreign or Galilean coins into clean Jewish currency, which could then be used in the temple. So in some sense, all of the animal sellers there, the money changers, they were all providing necessary services. But this isn't the way that Jesus saw it. All of a sudden, Jesus, it's almost like he sort of lost it, right? He makes a whip out of cords, and we're told that he drove everything out of the temple. All the sheep, all the cattle, he drove them away. And all the money of the money changers, they're nicely placed on the tables where he went, and he overturned the tables. Violence. Is this violence here on the part of Jesus? Well, perhaps it's the only time we see some kind of ultra-extreme physical kind of activity and emotion during Jesus' earthly ministry. He's pretty serious about what he's doing here. But what would cause Jesus to react in this extreme way? Well, the answer is given in verse 16 and also in verse 17. We see there are basically two parts, two reasons, which explain Jesus' action here. Now, by driving out the animals and pouring out the money changers' money and overturning their tables, Jesus was indicating that there was something wrong with all of that activity. Jesus' personal explanation can be seen through what he said when he was doing what he did. He said to those who were selling the doves, "Take these things away from here. Don't make my father's house into a market." The problem was the people had turned the temple into a marketplace. The temple was supposed to be the place where God was worshipped, but the people had turned the proper worship of God into an opportunity for economic gain. The worship of God centered on the temple, it had lost its focus on God and had become a means of making money. The worship of God at Jerusalem had become corrupted through commercialism. Instead of worshipping God, the people were there thinking about themselves, thinking about their own personal gain. Now, perhaps it's easy for us to point the finger against the Jews, but what about us? Why are you here? Are you making God's house into something it shouldn't be? Maybe you don't want to be here, but you've been told to come along. Well, you effectively have made God's house into a chore, something that you have to do. If that's your problem, with all due respect, you need to consider what you've been created for. You've been created to worship God. And here, what we're on about is trying to provide you with a positive environment in which you can do that. Or perhaps you're here because you want to meet with your friends or the relos. Well, nothing wrong with enjoying a chat or catching up with others. But if that's as far as it goes, if you really couldn't care less about giving God his due respect, and if you've been treating his house like a chat room, well, I wonder if Jesus thinks you should be here. And if you'd rather play games on your phone than listen to the sermon, well, perhaps if Jesus were here, I don't know, what would he do? He might do something like this.
Brennan? What have you got there?
Hello. Hello. Hello.
What is it? Samsung Galaxy, eh? Something new? I reckon this might be something like this. What do you reckon?
What do you reckon? Never forget that church, and by this I mean primarily the people, not just the building, never forget that the church is God's house. Our focus should be on him and treating him and his place with respect. Now, the second reason explaining Jesus' extreme action is given in verse 17. After reflection on the significance of this event, and probably after Jesus had been resurrected, Jesus' disciples, we're told, remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." Now the disciples, they came to understand that Jesus' action in clearing the temple, it wasn't just a case of Jesus losing his temper. Jesus was angry, that's true, but it wasn't a case of unjustified anger. Jesus did what he did on that day because of his zeal for God's house. Now the statement, "Zeal for your house will consume me," it's a quotation from Psalm 69, verse 9. Now this psalm is a prayer of salvation offered to God by a righteous sufferer. And here we see this being applied to Jesus. Jesus is the supreme example of the righteous person who suffers. And in the context of this psalm, Psalm 69, and in the Hebrew language generally, the word consumed basically means eaten up, right? Jesus was eaten up by this. And it has negative connotations. In the second half of Psalm 69, verse 9, the bit which isn't quoted in John's Gospel, it reads like this, "Zeal for your house has consumed me." That's the first part. And the second part, "The reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen on me." Here we can see that there's a kind of parallelism, right? There's a parallel between this person being consumed and being reproached. Now the reproach simply just means to blame or to rebuke someone. Here it's the idea of saying nasty things against someone else out of scorn or disdain. This connection between zeal and reproach in Psalm 69, it tells us that zeal for God goes together with opposition. You know, it makes sense. If you stand up for God, what's going to happen to you? Well, there can be some people around you who will oppose you because they don't agree with you. And because they think, God, well, I don't believe in him. Think about Jesus. Where did Jesus' zeal for God lead to? Because of Jesus' zeal for the temple, because of Jesus' zeal for the proper worship of God, because he is prepared to stand up and say to people, what you're doing there isn't right, what happened to him? Well, he suffered opposition, didn't he? Jesus' zeal for God, his desire that God might be glorified above all things, this motivated the whole of his life. It motivated the whole of his ministry on earth. And it led to him doing some extreme things at times, like driving people out of the temple, overturning tables. But he did this because he was zealous for God. And because he was zealous for God, and because of the things he said and did, challenged the people of the day, he ended up being consumed, destroyed as a result of his zeal. Where did Jesus' zeal lead him to? Where did he end up? Well, we know that his zeal for God, it ultimately led to the cross. Jesus was prepared to stand up for God. He was prepared to challenge the way in which the people of the day were treating God. But he suffered as a result. He suffered opposition. And in the end, he died on the cross because of his zeal for the Lord. This is why, when quoting Psalm 69 verse 9, the author of John's Gospel has actually changed the wording slightly. He's changed it from the original "has consumed" to "will consume." From effectively a past tense to a future tense. And this is because John and the other disciples, they understood that Jesus was the ultimate fulfillment of Psalm 69 verse 9, and that fulfillment would take place on the cross. Jesus' zeal for God led him to being consumed, destroyed on the cross. And here we can see quite clearly that Jesus was zealous for God. And the question is, what about you? Do you really care about the state of your spiritual life? Do you really care what happens to this church? Are you here because you want to worship God and to serve his people? Well, if you are, show it. Show it by your zeal. Show your zeal by getting involved, by spending time getting to know God better, by spending time in prayer, by thinking about what you can do to serve God and his people. Now, it might be by starting up a church newsletter, for example. Well, that one's already taken. It might be by starting up a new band. It might be by spending time during the week praying for the members of this church. It might be by joining the combined choir or helping the old guys mow the church lawns. Whatever it is, be zealous for God. And show your zeal through your action. Now Jesus, his action in clearing the temple, it posed a direct challenge to the Jewish religious authorities. They were the ones who controlled what happened in the temple. And so when Jesus had cleared the temple like that, done something scandalous, something that no one had ever seen before, they responded by asking Jesus on what authority he was doing what he was doing. And they asked him, as we see in verse 18, "What sign do you show us for doing these things? Where's the proof of your authority?" They're asking for a sign, for some kind of miracle, a show of strength or power on the part of Jesus that would prove his authority for doing what he had just done. But notice how Jesus responded and how he answered them. He pointed to his resurrection. "Destroy this temple," he said to them, "and in 3 days I will raise it up." Here we see Jesus giving a sign to the people. The sign was the destruction of this temple and the rebuilding of it in the space of 3 days. Now it's explained in verse 21 that the phrase "this temple," it was used by Jesus to refer to the temple of his body. But at the time, with Jesus situated in the Jewish temple, after having just driven everyone out of the temple, his words were deliberately ambiguous. Verse 22 shows the true meaning of these words of Jesus only became clear with hindsight, after his resurrection. But Jesus' opponents, they didn't understand some of this. They didn't understand that Jesus was referring to the temple of his own body. And so, with disbelief, they said to him, "This temple, it's been being built for over 46 years, and you're going to raise it up in the space of just 3 days? You've got to be kidding." Now, we can see that Jesus' opponents, they were thinking about the physical temple, right? And it's true. It took Herod 46 years to renovate the temple. Now, this work of renovation, it started around the year 20 BC. So this dates the encounter here with Jesus perhaps to around about 27 AD. But it wasn't the physical temple that Jesus had in mind. The destruction of the temple, he was referring to the destruction of his own body on the cross. And the rebuilding of it in the space of 3 days, well, we can see quite clearly how that is a reference to his resurrection. Basically, Jesus is saying here that his death and resurrection are going to be the sign of his authority, making him the person who is allowed to reform the worship of God and to say what the proper worship of God involves. Now, it might seem a bit strange to us that Jesus should talk about his own body in the form of a temple. You know, we don't often talk that way these days. But there is a deeper significance at this point which is worth us thinking about. Why would Jesus picture his body as a temple? Well, it links in with the wider temple theme of the Bible. Jesus here is basically hinting at the fact that he is the fulfillment of the temple theme of the Old Testament. Remember, back in the Old Testament, you've got the physical temple. It was a symbol of God's presence with his people. It was there at the temple that God had fellowship with his people. It was there at the temple that his people's sins could be forgiven and the way opened up for people to be able to come into the presence of God. But because of Israel's disobedience, the first temple, remember the temple which had been built by Solomon, what happened to it? It was destroyed. It was destroyed by the Babylonians. Then after the Jews came back from Babylon, back to the promised land, they rebuilt the temple. It was rebuilt, but we're told the glory of God never actually returned back to that temple. And so the second temple, it was like a shell. It was a shell waiting for the return of God's glory. And that's why it's significant that John's Gospel speaks of Jesus as being the return of God's glory to the temple. Jesus is the revelation of God's glory. And in fact, Jesus himself is the true temple. Now, I hope that every one of us here today understands that it's through Jesus that the relationship between God and humanity has been fully restored. Friends, it's only through Jesus that we can be friends with God. Jesus' death on the cross, it represents the destruction of the old symbolic temple. And his resurrection to life, it represents the creation of the new true temple, the place where God and humanity will be friends. So in some ways here we see it makes sense that Jesus would drive people out of the old temple. He's clearing the way for the new, which through his death and resurrection would be himself. Through Jesus, the new true temple has arrived. And with this, the proper worship of God will now be achieved. Friends, the big message from today is that Jesus is God's temple. But the question for each one of us is, do you actually believe that? Do you believe that Jesus is the new temple? The only way to God? Well, if you're not sure, then please think about the reality of Jesus' resurrection. That's the sign that he pointed to. When challenged about his claim to authority, Jesus pointed to the reality of his resurrection. It's like Jesus was saying to his opponents, "You want to know if what I'm saying is true? You want to know if what I'm doing is the right thing? That I'm truly here and have come from God? You want to know if this is true? Well, I tell you, I'm going to die and come back to life again 3 days later. If this happens, then you can believe everything that I'm saying is the truth." And this is how our passage finishes off today, doesn't it? "When therefore Jesus was raised from the dead, the disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and what Jesus had said." Friends, the fact of Jesus' resurrection led the disciples to recall Jesus' words about the rebuilding of the temple in the space of 3 days. And the fact that Jesus had done that through his resurrection, it was proof to them that the Bible is true and that Jesus himself is true. Jesus is the new temple. Jesus is the Father's house. Jesus is the presence of God, the Father, among us. Jesus is the church. Our job is to be zealous for him.